When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey, what's going on, Giants fans? Welcome to the latest episode of our Talk is Cheap podcast. Daryl Slater here with Bob Rookover from NJ Advanced Media, the Star Ledger, and NJ.com. It is Tuesday evening right now, and well, we were going to record this earlier. There was some internet stuff going on with Xfinity. Anyway, probably best that we're doing it now. We have a whole Tuesday of, I guess, some news to wrap up here as the Giants try to get this thing on track. They're 1-4. They've lost 3 straight games, and they've been just beaten badly in all of their losses. They've played 9 bad halves of football out of 10 this year. It's pretty grim for this team right now, and they're heading to Buffalo, maybe without their starting quarterback on Sunday night, and the Giants currently 2-touchdown underdogs in that game. So, yeah, I mean, a lot to unpack here coming out of the Miami game. We haven't spoken to you guys since early last week with before all the Evan Neal stuff. And so, Bob, with all that said, what's going on with you?
Oh, yeah, grim. You mentioned the word grim. That I just finished doing my morning post for tomorrow. And grim found its way in there, believe it or not. In the midst of looking things up, they're 1-4, and they're about to be, and they've been listed as a 14.5-point underdog Sunday against Brian Daboll's former team, the Buffalo Bills. Things are so bad, which it's hard to believe this, but like that storyline just kind of really doesn't even matter anymore. The Brian Daboll's going back to Buffalo. I'm sure it'll get written, but it's just things are so bad. It's such an afterthought right now. They've been outscored in their 4 losses by an average of 23.5 points per game. So that 14.5 point spread is pretty generous. maybe it should be worse than that, but it's just as grim can get right now. And then, you know, you factor in that we really don't know when Andrew Thomas is coming back, and the domino effect of what that has done to this offensive line, has, you know, just, we see it week in and week out. Daniel Jones has been sacked 28 times. The team's allowed a league high 30 sacks. The list of things we could say that are not complimentary about this football team, we actually have all the time in the world, but we don't. So we'll stop there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Brian Daboll grew up in Buffalo. He coached for the Bills, their OC, before the Giants hired him. And now he going back there for his, I guess, 25th game. So the 7, do the math. So counting the playoffs. So his 25th game as the Giants head coach. And he is now 11-12-1 as the Giants head coach. And you just minus out 1 from each of those for what he's in the regular season. You know, this team has really struggled since going back to really the 7-2 start last year. They stumbled, they get into the playoffs, they rally. It's kind of the reverse here. They had a lot of wiggle room last year. Right now they have no wiggle room. It's all gone. I mean, I know they've talked in that locker room about how the Chiefs, and when Raheem Nunez-Roches was on that team, made the playoffs or whatever. It was 2015. They started 1-5. They won 10 straight games and made the playoffs. That's not happening. That doesn't happen. Okay. So like that's like just not something that happens. So at 1-4, the playoff hopes look very dire. They've played 4 good teams. They've lost to all of them. This team has not yet shown it can beat a quality opponent. That's the bottom line. And that was the case largely last year. I mean, they did get lucky at times, and they didn't be, I think they had three wins over teams with winning records. But that Vikings playoff win in Minnesota just feels so long ago. And, you know, at this point, the Giants might be sellers at the trade deadline. We can get into that a little bit, but let's just start here, even though we've started already, with the Daniel Jones situation. Obviously, he gets sacked. He has a neck injury. You know, he had the neck injury in 2021, missed the final six games. At first, you know, there were indications based on what he said after the game that it was a similar injury. Then today he went on Kay Adams' show and said it's not. I mean, honestly, it doesn't really matter. It's moot what it was back then. He's dealing with a situation, whatever it is right now. So we know the x-rays came back negative, which is obviously when the x-rays are negative, that's a good thing. I mean, obviously, if he had a broken neck, I think people wouldn't be like, oh, are you going to play Sunday? Dable wouldn't have come out and said he was optimistic if he had any kind of fracture in his neck, of course. So we don't really know yet about the MRI, because he was not asked about it by Kay Adams today. So, I mean, Brian Dable, I was surprised to hear him say he was optimistic about Jones for Sunday. To me, I don't know. I mean, it's just not really something you want to screw around with, a neck injury.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the MRI results, even though we don't know what they were encouraging, because, you know, you have Dable saying he's optimistic, and then you also had Daniel Jones on the Kay Adams show also said that, you know, his goal was to try to play on Sunday against the Bills. So, I mean, obviously whatever is on that MRI was encouraging for them. And he said it's different than the injury he had in 2021 when they missed the final six games and the Giants lost all of them and averaged 9.3 points a game. You know, so that's good news. You know, relatively good news. Everything is relative. You know, any kind of good news right now is relative for the Giants, because everything else is so bad. The bad news is he's going to be playing behind that same or some semblance of that offensive line that has allowed him to be sacked 28 times. You know, we talked about this a little bit earlier today. Is it worth the risk of putting him out there against a team that, by the way, leads the NFL in sacks? You know, you can easily make the argument that no, it's not. But somebody's got to play quarterback. Tyrod Taylor's the option. You know, we saw when Tyrod Taylor went in the fourth quarter on Sunday, he was running maybe a little bit faster than Daniel Jones, but Daniel Jones runs pretty well himself, but he was running for his life just the way Daniel Jones was for much of the time he was in there. You know, so it's just you open with the word grim in there, and grim is just the very much the right word to describe the New York Giants right now.
I think, you know, we can just kind of keep some of the, you know, we'll talk big picture here, because, I mean, everyone saw what happened in the Dolphins game. We don't need to go over it. I mean, Jason Pinnock made a nice play from pick six, but, like, let's be honest, it's not meaningful, quite frankly, in any way in terms of
and to try to pass off that the defense had a good day because they got three takeaways after having zero in the first four games doesn't fly when you give up 524 yards, which I think you had looked up the most since 2015.
Right. So they're
but just, that doesn't fly.
They're really a mess all over. But the one area that is on the spotlight right now, of course, is their offensive line. You said it, Daniel Jones sacked 28 times. In terms of the pressures, he's been pressured 91 times. He's been pressured on 46. These are PFF numbers, obviously not the sack one, but they're how PFF defines a pressure. 91 times, he's been under pressure on 46% of his dropbacks. And that's been a pretty consistent rate throughout the season. I mean, he's been pressured a lot in all these games at about that 45 to 47% clip, which is just untenable. You cannot win like that. I mean, the guy might not be a very good quarterback, but, like, even a very good quarterback is going to struggle when he's pressured that often. And
you know what? And we don't want to get too much into this Dolphins game, but I thought he was playing fine on Sunday.
Yeah.
I think he was first seven. He was making good decisions. He was playing fine. And, you know, it just – and untenable is the perfect word for it. You know, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're Patrick Mahomes. I don't care if you're Joe Montana, you're Tom Brady. If you're dealing with that kind of pressure, you're not going to be effective. And, you know, Dable was asked several times, basically, Can you, you know, even talk about how Daniel Jones played today, given how much pressure he was under? And he did. And he basically said, you know what? He made some good decisions. He made some good plays. So,
yeah, they're not giving him a fair chance right now. And so obviously, so let's just like start with the line. Okay. And like everyone understands that when you lose your left tackle, especially one as good as Andrew Thomas, as great as Andrew Thomas, it's going to be a problem. Okay. So like, that's the situation the Giants are dealing with. Their special teams stink. The guy hurt his leg running down the field to chase a block punt because their special teams are a joke. And that happened in week one. He hasn't played since. Okay. So he had a setback and he probably isn't playing this week. And this, there's no end in sight to this hamstring thing. And that's not Andrew Thomas's fault. None of that is. So how in the world is your best option to replace this guy over the course of multiple games, a second-year player in Josh Azudu, who struggled at left guard last year and couldn't keep the job, who couldn't win the job in camp this year, essentially, over Mark Lewinsky, a guy who they desperately do not want to play. And then they're going to decide that he is their best option at left tackle? What? Like, okay, so like...
Yeah. I mean, and it goes deeper than that, too, because... You know, the guy who's really supposed to be the number one backup at both tackles, I think, is supposed to be Matt Parrott.
Yeah.
You know, they obviously thought more. You know, Parrott was actually the guy who went in when Andrew Thomas came out of that first game in the fourth quarter. He was the guy who went in for him. And then he got hurt. And somewhere, you know, he's healthy now, but somewhere in that time frame, you know, Josh Azudu played all right. I think he played like 12 snaps, maybe more. I forget exactly the exact number that he played against the Cowboys. But that was enough to convince them that, all right, Josh Azudu should be the guy, not Matt Peart. You know, and you know, it just seems like so random what they're doing to make that decision, you know, based on the little sample sizes they've had to make those kinds of decisions. And then you add in the fact that at the end of the training camp, they cut Tyree Phillips, who had filled in for Neal last year, Evan Neal, for three or four games when he was hurt, and did a pretty good job. You could even argue that he was doing a better job than Evan Neal. And, you know, they just let him go. He's on the Eagles practice squad now. But they just decided, oh, don't need him. But they made that decision without having any real good solution to. And obviously, it's bad luck to have Andrew Thomas go out in your first game of the season. But, you know, they didn't have any good solution for that happening.
Here's what I will say. Okay. So if you have a right tackle who you draft 7th overall, and that guy proves that he was worth the 7th overall pick, and he's 20 games into his career, you're probably moving him to left tackle and putting someone else, putting your lesser guy at right tackle, right? I mean, is that not logical? Like, right, you're going to protect your quarterback's blind side with your best tackle, right? But the problem is, the guy they drafted 7th overall last year, Evan Neal, he looks like a bust. I mean, that's just the reality of it.
At this point, yeah.
Well, we can get into the numbers, but... The solutions, obviously, Tyree Phillips. No one's saying he's going to be a savior at left tackle, and we all understand that when you have to go to your backup at left tackle, it's going to be a problem. Okay, so like, but they over the course of multiple regimes now, we can go back to Jerry Reese, but Dave Gettleman did a mostly poor job building this offensive line outside of the Andrew Thomas pick. And again, he picked a really good player 4th overall. Congratulations. And the problem is, he failed, as the Giants so often have, at so many positions in the middle rounds of the draft. Parrott, a 3rd-round pick in 2020, the guy can't play. So now Azudu, I think, look, I mean, could he be a good guard going forward? Maybe, but he is not equipped to be their left tackle right now. And between Parrott not being good enough, between them deciding to move on from Tyree Phillips, this is where they're at, with Azudu being the option there. And Azudu now... has 6 penalties this year. He had 3 on Sunday. He had back-to-back false starts, which I don't even know how that's possible. He's allowed 5 sacks this year, 11 pressures. That's not in addition to 11 pressures, including 5 sacks. He had a 25.4 PFF pass block grade on Sunday, allowed to hit the second Daniel Jones, where he has sustained the neck injury. And then, look, no one is saying anyone here is a bad person. Like, we'll get to some of that in a minute about some of the things that have been said about some of these players. But, like, this is a very earnest kid who wants to do well and work hard. He's being put in an unfair position because of poor roster management over the course of a couple regimes. Okay, so Joe Shane has not made a bad offensive line really much better at all, quite frankly. He has not. Azudu, Glowinski, Neal, those are not good additions. McKeithen was a late round pick. Okay. But
you can throw this into the argument too. He made a decision to draft John Michael Schmitz as his center and make him the center, and John Michael Schmitz could end up being a really good player. He, hurt and didn't play last week because of shoulder injury. But, whatever he develops into, right now, for this year, you could make the easy argument that the Giants would be better off with either Nick Gates, who is starting and playing pretty well at center for the Commanders, or with John Feliciano, who's a backup in San Francisco. They were both playing better at this stage last season than John Michael Schmitz has played so far this season. It's not that John Michael Schmitz has been horrible, but you make the case that those two guys right now are better than John Michael Schmitz, who's a rookie.
For sure, and I think letting Gates go is a big one, right? Because Feliciano, rather, getting my John Centers for the Giants confused. Feliciano, was their center last year. He could play guard, but Gates showed you last year he could play left guard. He got good money from Washington, and they obviously wanted to give Azudu a chance to win that job. He didn't do it in the spring, which is why they're in the summer, which is why they went in with Bredesen at left and Glowinski at right, and so. They could use Gates right now in his versatility, because especially with Schmitz hurt, right, he could plug and play center, or you could look at a situation where Gates can even play a little tackle too. So, but again, no one's saying Nick Gates is a Hall of Famer here, but you're talking about these little moves, these decisions that snowball and over time in terms of the decisions that not just like the decisions they've made on the line, but the people they've decided to acquire and draft. So, we don't need to necessarily go every position here. Like, look, and I was talking to Azudu. Okay. So like, as I was saying, like we saw it. It was a really hard scene to watch last week in the Seattle game. And then it was the same exact thing this week. The poor kid openly weeping in the locker room after the game, and he two straight really bad games. And it's just hard to watch.
It is. I mean, it's he obvious. Cares. He cares so much, and he works hard, and they're not supposed to be cheering in the press box, but I promise you that every writer that covers the New York Giants in that press box, if Josh Azudu went out this week and gave up zero sacks and zero pressures, we would all be pleased and more than willing to go and happy to go talk to him and be happy for him.
I will say this. This was one of the more standout moments I've seen in a really long time in a post-game losing locker room. He allowed a sack that at that point, as far as we knew, like who knows how long Daniel Jones is going to be. All right. The kid had just played an absolutely horrendous game with the penalties, the sack allowed. He sat at his locker and answered every question. He was answering questions through tears. And as far as I know, you were over there. He didn't tell people to go away or stop, or he didn't want to keep doing
it. No, we stopped because he just emotionally couldn't talk about it anymore. He emotionally couldn't talk about it anymore. And he was leaning on his faith. He basically said, "I thank God," and he couldn't continue after that. I mean, it was heart-wrenching. I've been covering sports for 40 something years, and I'm not sure I've ever seen a professional athlete's emotions just overcome him as much as I saw it. I've seen guys get angry and lash out at writers, which was not at all what was happening here. This guy was just overcome with emotion because he was so disappointed in his own performance. And and you factor in that who was put in a more difficult of all the injuries the Giants have had here, who was put in a more difficult situation than him? Nobody.
and I will say, as people who know about this young man, he has a stutter, and he gives interviews fine, and he's willing to, but if anyone, you never know anyone who's had a situation like that. It's hard to speak publicly, to speak, you know, in front of a camera, to speak to reporters who are strangers, and to do it in an emotionally tough situation like that. I think it shows a lot about his character. And so the whole thing is just a really tough situation for him and for the Giants right now. And like, he's obviously really frustrated and in a headspace where that happens in back-to-back weeks in the locker room. I guess you could just look at it through the lens of the performance. Like, why they keep rolling him out there? And plus he's in a frustrated headspace. Why do they keep rolling him out there? I mean, I guess the answer is that he's their best option of not very many good options right now.
It was interesting that it was in the middle of a series, and obviously Daniel Jones went on it, but he went out on the same play that Daniel Jones went out of. You know, they took him out immediately after that play, and Parrott finished the game. So I'm going to be surprised if Matt Parrott isn't the starter on Sunday. I really will be.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And so that presents some of its own problems. I mean, like, I don't need to get into all. You guys watch Matt Parrott play, you know, like, okay, so like, you know what he did? Okay, let's just say for Sunday, okay, Matt Parrott was in the game. Another guy who's a really nice guy. We're not talking about like whether these people are nice people or not. That's part of this, I get, right? So like, it's part of the context. But Matt Parrott on Sunday played 19 pass blocking snaps. He allowed 4 pressures. Oh, so that just tells you all you need to know. I mean, the guy has not been very good. And that's why they haven't put him on the field. And so it's not, I mean, they have so many problems right now on their line because we're still on the left side here, but like, obviously all the moving pieces they need to do with Bredesen moving to center with Schmitz hurt. The Thomas injury is so bad and so disastrous, but are there things they could have done? Could keeping Tyree Phillips have been somewhat of a solution? Maybe. But through all this conversation here, I think the biggest thing that Joe Shane has gotten wrong with rebuilding this line is the Evan Neal pick looks like a complete failure right now. And so, no, Evan Neal would not. Yeah, maybe he'd be the left tackle, right? Okay, but maybe not. But like, the fact that Andrew Thomas is not in there and Evan Neal is playing the way he's playing while Azudu's struggling too, it's just, you cannot have your two tackles playing that poorly. It's not feasible. I mean,
no, the video of the offensive line that has gone viral this week is the one I believe is in the first half. You know, the Giants had, I believe, 5 offensive linemen lined up against 4 rushing Dolphins players. And Bredesen got beat inside, so that created a problem up the middle. But then both McKeithen and Evan Neal blocked inside and just allowed the outside rusher. Now, I don't know, you know, I don't know what the scheme was. I don't know what they, you know, whether they're expecting a twist or some kind of, you know, some kind of stunt type move. But it was just unbelievable to watch. It's like they just gave the guy a free run, and you know, the play that Daniel Jones gets hurt on, guy has a free run because Josh Azudu doesn't get off the ball. And I wonder if him not getting off the ball had something, you know, goes back, and this is a different half, much later in the game. But you know, you have the 2 false starts, so now you're like consciously like, can't false start again. And now you end up being late movement. And you see so many guys in the NFL, you see it so often where you see that those edge tackles getting off the ball and you say, didn't he left early, and they don't call it. So you see that all the time in this league. But
and to your point about that video, and Brian Baldinger was spotlighting that very video, and his quote, because he does a lot of these video reviews on Twitter, was that level of dysfunction is, and then he's kind of stopped. He said, you just can't operate like that. And that's very true. The Giants can't operate, but there's no easy solutions here on this line. I mean, you kind of make your bed when you draft a guy 7th overall and he has failed on the level that Evan Neal has failed on. I mean, he has now played in, I believe it's 20. Let me make sure I get this right. It's he has played in 20 games, counting the playoffs, and he has allowed in his career 78 pressures. 78 pressures. He allowed 6 in Miami. He has 26 for the year. The guy is allowing more than 5 pressures a game. He had a 29 pass blocking grade in Miami. And hit for the year, he's at 35. Last year he was at 42. So, I mean, he changed his pass blocking stance and it's worse. Look, he tries. It's not an Eric Flowers thing where he's resistant to coaching. I mean, this is an earnest guy who takes it seriously. And I guess here's where we can kind of get into the interview I did with him last week. And he's very frustrated, clearly. I mean, he even said that's why he made those comments ripping the fans. And he's angry. You know, he's an intense guy. And so he cares. He gives a crap, you know. So clearly he gives a crap about how his play is being perceived and how he's playing. And so it boiled over there. And I want to say here, like, no one is saying he's a bad person. The Don LaGreca rant was just so beyond the pale and like and just disgusting, quite frankly. And but to be clear to anyone listening, like, that attitude about whether a person is a good person or is a horrible person. Okay. Like, first of all, number one, no one in our media room like passes judgment on these guys as people, and certainly doesn't do it based on a quote where he's just getting into it with fans. This guy, he didn't say anything racist or sexist or homophobic or anything like that. Like, the comments he made were obviously negative toward the fans, right? But like, come on, you can't to say that was just awful. And it's a dumb part of our profession that people can get away with saying that sort of irresponsible stuff. Anyway. But that was the point I make. But like, I think obviously we critique these guys on how they play, and he's not playing well right now. I mean, there's no hiding from that.
He's a good guy. He's a stand up guy, and will stand there and, you know, talk to you and talk about his performance. Yeah, it's just, you know, I hate to go back to Philadelphia, but so much of my career was spent in Philadelphia, and it's just such a contrast, the tackle positions. And what I've seen in these 2 years, obviously Andrew Thomas, great, great left tackle. He's only been there a few years now. Been there, this is his fourth season. But I've watched the Eagles for years. I think they've had 3 offensive tackles since 2000, right around 2000, maybe 1999. They went from Trey Thomas to Jason Peters. So we're talking about like 14 Pro Bowls, to Jordan Mulata, who's also one of the best in the league. Those have been their 3 tackles for almost a quarter of a century. And then you go to the right tackle and you went from John Runyon to Lane Johnson, for 2 guys for a quarter century, pretty much. It's amazing that they've been had that good a play. And then to watch, by contrast, what I've seen from the Giants at right tackle, and now, you know, Andrew Thomas was great last year and is a great tackle. So not, you know, that obviously doesn't fit in there, but it's just been, from my eyes, amazing. I've never seen an offensive line play this bad in my life.
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of Giants fans have, and they've seen it recently. And the reason is because this team has done such a pretty much awful job at drafting linemen. Like, all right, so go back to 2011. Jerry Reese was the GM, right? And I'm just drawing this line as like, as we go through, like, why, you know, we understand that this line has been bad for a while. Okay, so you're talking about 4th round picks and up, 4, 3, 2, 1, those rounds, right? In 2011, they drafted James Brewer. These are like very forgettable names. 2012, Brandon Mosley. I'm not going to get into guys who are 5th, 6th, and 7th round because you don't necessarily expect that guy. Obviously, 2013, they take Justin Pugh, who was a productive player for them and is now back on their practice squad. Then Weston Richburg in 2014. And then, of course, Flowers in 15 in the first round. And then they don't draft another one into Will Hernandez, who did not work out in 2018, a guard in the second round, a Dave Gettleman special there. And then, of course, Andrew Thomas. And in that same year, though, they drafted Matt Parrott, right? So, like, that pick has not worked out. And then you can't even say the jury's out on Evan Neal and Azudu. I mean, the jury's out on Azudu. I think we've seen enough from Evan Neal at this point to cast serious doubts on whether he can thrive or let alone stick as a starter at this level. I mean, it's that bad. And then obviously the jury's still out on John Michael Schmitz. But you're talking about a long history of poor decision making on the offensive line, especially when it comes to building through the draft. And it's all catching up to them now. I mean, we all said before the year, like they have Andrew Thomas and a bunch of question marks in the offensive line. And now they have not only a bunch of question marks, but a bunch of like a complete disaster situation.
Yeah. I mean, I've kind of wrote for tomorrow, you know, the dream of this being a playoff season is pretty much shot, but what can happen to salvage the season? And, you know, the number one thing that has to happen between now and their final game of the season in January against the Eagles is they have to have some semblance of an offensive line that, you know, they can come back with next year and say, hey, we're okay here. You know, obviously that starts with Andrew Thomas coming back and being healthy, Schmitz coming back and making strides for the rest of the season. You know, the big question, and we go back to, is Evan Neal, is he even salvageable at this point? You know, I was talking about the Eagles, and there was a little stretch in there where they played a guy named Winston Justice, and he comes to mind because I think he allowed 4 or 5 sacks in a game the year the Giants won the Super Bowl. And this was kind of the game where the Giants realized, hey, we got a Super Bowl type defense. They played the Eagles. They sacked Donovan McNabb 12 times and Winston Justice was at the heart of it all, but the Eagles did figure out a way to salvage him. They started giving him a lot of help the rest of the season. He was in there because somebody was hurt. I think it was Trey Thomas who was hurt at that point. And they did figure out, he was a high pick too. He's a first round pick, from USC, and they started helping him and they figured out a way to make him. He wasn't a great left tackle, but he became a decent NFL tackle. Let's see how many years Winston Justice ended up playing, which, you know, this is just maybe some hope going forward for Evan Neal. Justice ended up playing seven seasons, ended up starting 29 games in 2009 and 2010 for the Eagles. So he ended up being okay, salvageable a little bit. You know, they moved on as soon as they got Lane Johnson, he was done. But that might be the best that the Giants can hope for right now in Evan Neal. That's a bust. And you pull the, but at least it's salvageable. They got 29 starts out of him in his third and fourth years. You know, Evan Neal is going to be going into his third and fourth years. I don't know if the Giants can get that out of him, and what do you do? And then on top of that, you still got you went into training camp not knowing what you wanted to do at guard, and we're still now 5 games in the season, and they still don't know what they want to do at guard. I mean, I think they think maybe Ben Bredesen can be part of this, maybe, but that's a big maybe. You know, I'd argue that they'd be better with Gates than Bredesen.
There's so many things here that now, there's a lot of implications here as these losses start to snowball. I mean, say the Giants lose this Sunday's game, go 1-5. That means they will have lost all 5 of the good teams they played in this first stretch of 6 games. And they, to even get to say, 8 wins, which should be 8-9. At that point, they'd have to finish 7-4. I mean, that's, who knows if they're even capable of that. At this point, it is really looking like.
Yeah, the schedule looks a lot tougher than it did. Even, you know, the Commanders are not a horrible team, although they played a horrible game last week against the Bears. The Jets are better than the Giants. There's no doubt about that. The Raiders on the road is no picnic. The Cowboys on the road don't win that. And then the Commanders on the road probably don't win that.
Eagles twice. I mean, it's just like
Eagles twice. And then Saints, the Saints have one of the best defenses in the NFL. The Rams are better than we thought. You know, they do get to play the Patriots, and the Giants always beat the Patriots. That's just it. They always beat the Patriots. And maybe in the least important game they've ever played against the Patriots, maybe they can do it again.
Yeah, and like as these losses start to mount, then it becomes like next year is not going to be just a hot seat year for Daniel Jones, who again for the umpteenth time, you got a 2-year contract. He can get a 4-year contract. And so how do you evaluate this guy? How do you give him a fair chance? I mean, that was the conversation like going into like this offseason, right? Did they see enough to evaluate him because they weren't protecting him? But like now they're not even giving the guy a shot with this line.
Well, and you almost, you know, if you'd like one of those quarter, if you end up being so bad that you have a top five pick or top three pick, do you pick the quarterback right now? If you like, if you think Caleb Williams is better than anything you're going to see next year, you know, or whoever is better than anything you're going to see next year, do you do it right now and you don't worry about it? You say, hey, you know what, we have to play Daniel Jones next season, but it doesn't really have that much impact on the salary cap because, you know, even rookie quarterbacks, I think count like 6-7 million against the cap in that first year with it, you know, with the bonuses and stuff, even your first round pick. And if you're not a first round pick, you know, do they go pick a quarterback and say, hey, you know what, we're going to accelerate looking for our next quarterback right now. We'll let Daniel Jones start next year, but we'll let this guy watch and learn. You know, especially after he's going to get hit so much, that's got to be on the table, I think.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's similar to what the Eagles did with Carson Wentz and Jalen Hurts, right? And so yeah, I mean, like Daniel Jones's future here, I know he just signed the contract, but again, it's a two-year deal. Brian Daboll is entering a situation where he's going to be on the hot seat entering next year. Like he's going to be. Like that's if this keeps up, I don't think they're barring something crazy. He's going to get fired at the end of this year. But one thing to remember about Daboll in the hot seat is Joe Judge's buyout. He got a 5-year contract. So did Daboll. So did Pat Shurmur before Joe Judge. Joe Judge's buyout, the final year is next year. So say they fire Daboll after 2024, they would be paying Daboll's buyout, obviously, and then the new coach. Last year, they were paying three coaches. They were paying the final year of Pat Shurmur's buyout because he got hired in 2018, which is 18, 19, 21. So yeah, 2022, they were paying three coaches. They're paying Daboll, Joe Judge, and Pat Shurmur. Now, obviously, it's offset by money they're making elsewhere or whatever. But point being, I don't think they're going to go two. I don't think John Mara has the stomach to go two and out with a fourth straight coach, McAdoo, Shurmur, Judge, and Daboll. But look, the guy made the playoffs last year. I think he gets the benefit of the doubt. But this team just hasn't shown the ability to take the next step. I get that injuries are part of it. They haven't shown the ability to beat good teams. And not only have they not beaten good teams, they're getting demolished. I mean, it's almost unfathomable. Outside of the second half in Arizona, the Giants in nine halves have been outscored 145 to 31. What? What is that? Like
That's you know, it takes away the, well, they played good teams because they didn't play good teams. They got steamrolled by good teams. They weren't in the games. They weren't competitive.
they didn't show up against they barely played because they didn't show up.
I mean, you could make an argument, well, they were only down 17-10 to the Dolphins at halftime, but that score, you know, that game to me, you can keep score by the stats, 524 to 268. The Giants have gone over 300 yards just once all season. They've been under 200 yards twice, over 250 just twice.
Their offense is broken. I mean,
Broken, and the defense is not good. I mean, you know, this was supposed to be a better defense in Wink Martindale's second season. You know, Kayvon's shown flashes, but his PFF grades are way down because they've really graded him hard on the run. Like he's, they're, you know, he doesn't have a lot of tackles. He's got four sacks. He's had four in the last three games, I guess. But you know, Aziz is hurt again. You know, they got the takeaways, and you know, there are players on defense. You look at, I think Deonte Banks has played very well for a rookie. Okereke has been hot and cold. You know, he flashes sometimes too, but there's just been no consistency. The defense has been okay at times, but not, you know, Wink Martindale's not going to hang his hat on, oh, my defense is okay. you know, that's not what he was brought in here to have an okay defense.
Yeah, and along the lines of Banks, he had a 73.5 coverage grade in Miami. That's his best so far. He played a really good game, 73.2 overall defensive grade.
Gave up three catches for like 15 yards, which against Jalen Waddle, which was pretty good.
Five targets, three catches, 15 yards. And so quick discussion, you know, we can wrap this up in a bit, but I did want to touch on, and especially because this is really impacting the defense, the NFL's trade deadline is 3 weeks from today, on Halloween at 4 o'clock. The Giants have three games between now and then. They will either be 1-7, 2-6, 3-5, or 4-4. Obviously, if they're 4-4, they're probably not going to be sellers. If they're 3-5, I don't know. But if they're 2-6 or 1-7, Joe Shane should be looking to sell. And the guys to look for, I think, would be Leonard Williams, Adoree Jackson, and Xavier McKinney. And just real quick, I wrote down this for the morning. I mean, Saquon Barkley, he's hurt, right? And no one's going to – unless he shows up these next 3 weeks, looks totally healthy and plays outstanding, and then they still lose, like, then I guess maybe. But, like, those combinations of things are not happening. Like, no one's trading for him. But those other guys, I think, are really interesting. McKinney, especially if they decide they don't want to pay him. He's got a manageable contract, rookie deal, the last year that a team could take on. The issue with the Leonard Williams and Adoree Jackson is their salaries. I mean, Leonard Williams got an $18 million salary. Adoree Jackson, I think, 11. So the Giants would probably have to eat some of that in order to get anything substantial in return. But, yeah, I mean, they could be looking at a situation where this defense takes a blow or two from the trade deadline, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. You could add it like a guy like A'shaun Robinson in there. He's a second tier guy, but you know, guys like that are certainly fair game in terms of if you get a seventh round pick for him, you would take it in a heartbeat. If you're out of it, but you know, you mentioned that the prominent guys in there, you know, I don't know who would want anybody on their offense right now.
Yeah, no, I mean that those would be the guys, and the thing with McKinney is you could say, oh, you know, let him sign in free agency elsewhere, and then you can get a comp pick for him. Well, the comp pick's not showing up till 2025. That's how that works. You trade him now, and you get something for him next year, because Joe Shane's in a situation where he needs to win next year. They need to get some players in here that can help them immediately, not wait till 2025 with a comp pick. You know, obviously Leonard Williams is going to be 30 next year, and Adoree Jackson, I think, will be 29 in mid-September next year. So those are guys. And then they just drafted Banks, right? So they think he can be their number one corner. I think they're ready to move on from Leonard Williams and Adoree Jackson at the end of this year. It was just a matter of like, look, you know, they were going maybe not all in per se, but like you can keeping these guys around because they're trying to win now. But if they're not winning now, what's the point in having them around? That's something that could happen. It's 3 weeks away, but keep an eye on it, I guess.
In turn, not to put a sad face on anything we've said here today, but you know, if those things start happening, then there's a good chance the Giants are going to be even worse. But
I will say,
that's okay, because you got to start looking at some young guys and see what you got, for sure.
Yeah, and then that's a situation where you're not firing the coach if you do that either. And then, I don't think they're firing him. I wrote coming out of the game that the honeymoon's over for Dable. It's over, and it's shocking how quickly it ended, right? You know, for John Mara to say after the Vikings playoff win, we're back. And what have they done since? They got their brains beat in by the Eagles. And then they come out this year and gotten their brains beat in 9 of 10 halves. And other than the one half, a good half, they played really good half, obviously historically good half, against Arizona, which is they're a bad team. The Cardinals are bad. Okay. So like they've played better than expected, but they're bad. And so, they've done nothing since he said we're back. What they are back is they're back to being a joke right now. And they're like one of the worst teams in the NFL. Now, things balance out. They're not going to play teams this hard all year. And I think you had a, before we came on, what was the stat that you saw about the teams they've played so far? Obviously they're good teams. Everyone knows that.
Yeah. But the ESPN rankings, after they played the Bills, they will have played in their first six games. They will have played five of the top eight in the most recent ESPN rankings that came out yesterday or today. They came out today. Five. So the Bills, the Niners are number one. The Dolphins are four, I think. The Cowboys are seven. The Seahawks are eight. And the Bills are in there somewhere, but they're all in the top eight, five of the first six opponents.
I mean, the schedule was gruesome for them early on, the Giants.
And then you factor in the loss of your two best offensive players, and it really has been a perfect storm for them. But and so it has been a perfect storm, and you could say, hey, so much has gone wrong. But the fact that they've been beaten so handily makes it inexcusable.
It does. I mean, yeah. So the Bills lost by 5 points to the Jaguars in London. But I think it's worth noting that
I don't know that's good for the Giants.
Well, the Jaguars, I mean, like, I think that the result's a little deceiving. The Jaguars had played, that was their second straight game in London. So they were already over there. They didn't have to deal with the acclimation of going over. I mean, I guess the whole thing about them being used to it or whatever but I think the bigger advantage is that they had been there. They had been in London from the previous week. So that, whereas the Bills were just coming in that week. So a little bit, what's that?
The Jags are a pretty good team too.
Yeah. So a little deceptive there, I think. And the Bills are obviously super dangerous. And you mentioned it, Von Miller, Leonard Floyd, the guy who ended Aaron Rodgers' season. Now, he did that, he beat an offensive lineman who was not playing well in Dwayne Brown on that play. But yeah, look, I mean, when you look at let's just look at the pass rush ratings of these teams. So the PFF pass rush ratings right now, Niners are one. Obviously they killed the Giants. Cowboys are two. They destroyed the Giants too as well. Seahawks are five. I mean, probably a lot of these numbers have to do with the fact they played the Giants. The Dolphins are six.
Certainly that Seahawks one.
Yeah, and the Dolphins are six. Of course, then we all know the Eagles are really good. They're seven. They're coming up for the Giants. And the Bills are ninth. The Bills, who have not played the Giants, are ninth at PFF's pass rush ratings. So there you go. They have a really good pass rush. And that's going to cause problems for a team that is, okay, the Giants are the worst pass blocking team in the league by like 4 percentage points in this grade system. And it's just one of many things that they're like near the very bottom of the league in. I mean, overall, they're the worst team in the league right now, according to PFF. PFF has them with an overall grade of 51.6. The Broncos are at 60.5. They're by far the worst team in the league on here. Granted, the Panthers have zero wins, whereas the Giants are there. The Giants are in pretty dubious company here. Well, obviously the Pats, but 1-4, the Vikings 1-4, the Broncos 1-4, Bears and Cardinals also 1-4, right down there at the bottom of the Giants. So, yeah, I mean, we're basically at the 1/3-ish mark of the season, right? Just short of it.
Yep. And, next week will be 18 weeks, and next week will be week 6.
Yeah, 6 games out of 17. So next week they'll cross over the 6 out of 17. So yeah, but. Man, I guess we'll just close with our
our pick.
Heck, I mean, like, folks, I'm sorry to be like, there's not really much good to talk about with this team right now. We mentioned some of these encouraging young players, and look, if the season keeps going poorly, that's what this is going to be. We'll be talking about some of these young guys. It's not going to be a rehash of the grim and the gruesome every week, but that's where they're at right now. A team that cannot play up to the level of playoff contenders, a team that. It sure looks like they got awfully lucky last year on the way to 9.5 wins. And a team that has really, since the 7-2 start, I'll go ahead and look up this number because I wrote it while writing about Brian Daboll probably entering next year on the hot seat. They started 7-2 last year. In the regular season since then, they're now 3-9-1. You take out the week 18 game in Philly because they didn't try. Because they didn't play starters, 3-8-1 over any stretch of regular season games, even over 2 years. year, you know, two seasons is awful. And that's what Brian Daboll is right now.
I think Steve Politi referred to that as Shermarian.
Yeah. Macadoodley is Steve.
And Macadoodley.
The way these things have, you know, gone down, especially. So yeah. Anyway, so my pick for Sunday, I don't know. I'm just gonna completely wing it here. It's gonna be a complete disaster for the Giants again. I think they're gonna lose 31-10.
All right. And I'm gonna tell you everyone about my Halloween costume. I'm going something really scary this year. I'm gonna go out as a New York Giant. That should scare everybody. Because they are a scary bad team. But I'm picking the Giants this week to lose 30-10.
It's the same exact pick. You just minus one off of the I always wind up writing a different pick than I pick here. So
I'm gonna write mine down. What did you say? 31-10?
31-10. I'll probably type up something different when we send our picks in.
I'll put 30-10. Last week I typed something different and we actually had the same exact score. And we were both right.
Well, look, I mean, it's been an interesting week to say the least for the Giants and everything that's happened. With more losing, Evan Neal's comments, and obviously his play didn't do himself many favors with how he played, coming out of saying those things. And, you know, I think that they should be maybe thankful they're not on the road this week, and that they are on the road, or he should be. But I can't imagine, you know, it's easy to see how they're going to come home 1-5 and how all the problems that we're seeing right now are still going to be there, because no one's swooping in to rescue this team and this offense and this line, especially because, you know, doesn't look like Andrew Thomas is close. I talked to him on Friday and he just doesn't know when he could be back. So that is really derailing their season at the worst possible time, as they're playing these really good teams with really good pass rushes. And yeah, that's where they're at. So we'll have a lot of analysis, obviously, of big picture stuff, with the lean toward the big picture. We're not going to be writing about these in-game minutia here. So nj.com/Giants, as always. And thanks, everybody, for listening. Be sure to subscribe, rate, review, like, all that stuff on all the places where you listen to podcasts. We will be back with you next week. Have a good week, and maybe try to enjoy the Sunday night game in Buffalo if you're going, or I guess go to Bar Bill and get some wings. So we will talk to you guys soon. Take care.